There's a line in the Polar's 2.0 announcement that I keep thinking about. The team describes the project as having crossed the threshold from fast library to fast platform. That framing tells you a lot about where data tooling is heading in 2026.
Polar's has been on a remarkable trajectory. For those unfamiliar, Polar's is a data frame library written in Rust, designed as a high-performance alternative to Pandas for data manipulation workloads. The 1X series established Polar's as the go-to choice for anyone who needed Pandas-like ergonomics but couldn't tolerate Pandas-like performance at scale. The 2.0 release is described as a pre-release, so full benchmarks aren't yet available, but the announcement hints at changes to the query engine, enhanced streaming support for datasets that don't fit in memory, and an expanded plugin API.
The plugin API expansion is what's catching the HN community's attention most. If Polar's 2.0 genuinely supports a rich extension ecosystem, it becomes something closer to a platform that other tools can build on, rather than just a library you import. That's how DeepLer became the center of the R data ecosystem, and how Pandas became unavoidable in Python despite its performance limitations. Ecosystem gravity is often more powerful than performance advantages.
The comments are also discussing the breaking changes in 2.0. Polar's has historically been willing to make API breaking changes between major versions, which is philosophically correct but operationally painful for anyone maintaining a production pipeline. The question the community is asking is whether the 2.0 stabilizations are complete enough that teams can confidently migrate and then stay on a stable surface for an extended period.
From the browser world, the post on the browser's main thread is one of those articles that the HN community gravitates toward because it explains something developers intuitively know is true, but struggle to articulate to non-technical stakeholders. The main thread in a browser is the single thread responsible for rendering the UI, handling JavaScript execution, processing user input, and running layout and paint operations. When any of those tasks takes too long, the browser's frame rate drops and the interface feels unresponsive.
The article does a good job quantifying what expensive actually means in this context. 60 frames per second, the standard smooth experience target, gives you about 16 milliseconds per frame to do all of that work. If a JavaScript task runs for 30 milliseconds, you've dropped frames and introduced jank. The piece catalogs the specific operations that are most costly: large DOM manipulations, synchronous layout queries that force a reflow, unoptimized scroll event handlers, and heavy canvas operations.
What I find interesting about this piece, in the context of today's other stories, is the WebAssembly angle. The engineers at WASMI have published a deep technical post on how they built the fastest WebAssembly interpreters, and the optimization techniques they describe: tail call dispatch, register-based VM designs, careful cache utilization, are directly relevant to the main thread problem. If more computation can be offloaded to WebAssembly modules that run predictably and are easier to profile, some of the main thread pressure can be relieved.
The WASMI v2.0 post is genuinely impressive technical writing. They're describing a transition from a stack-based interpreter to a register-based design for their core execution loop, which they estimate yields a 2 to 3 times performance improvement on compute-heavy workloads. The intuition is that stack machines involve more memory operations, pushing and popping, whereas register machines can hold intermediate values in CPU registers directly, which is much faster. This is the same architectural reason that most modern CPUs are register machines rather than stack machines.
The HN thread on that post has an interesting sub-discussion about where WebAssembly fits in the ecosystem now that it's mature enough to run production workloads. The original pitch was run code from any language safely in the browser. That's still valid. But increasingly, WebAssembly is being used outside browsers, in serverless edge compute, in plugin systems like Fastly's Compute, and in embedded contexts where you want a sandbox scripting layer without the overhead of a full VM.
Cloudflare's cache transcoding post is the third major infrastructure story today. They're describing how they're using Zstandard compression, ZSDD, via their Pingora proxy framework to recompress cached content at the edge. The headline claim is petabytes of storage savings across Cloudflare's cache tier, which at their scale means real money and real performance impact for origin servers.
The technical substance here is about transcoding, taking content that was compressed with one algorithm, say gzip, and recompressing it with ZSDD on the fly as it enters the cache. ZSDD offers significantly better compression ratios than gzip at comparable decompression speeds, which means smaller cached objects, more effective use of cache storage, and lower egress costs. The challenge is doing this at CDN scale without introducing latency in the cache writing path.
The Pingora framework, Cloudflare's Rust-based proxy they open-sourced last year, is central to making this work. The async architecture in Pingora allows the transcoding to happen in the background of cache writes without blocking response delivery. This is a good example of systems engineering where the performance gains are invisible to end users but structurally significant for infrastructure operators.